Welcome to Information Farm Information Analysis number 7. Today we're going to go into the history of banking with Joseph Farrell, work through some other people, and arrive at commentary on the Queen's visit to Wall Street on July 5th and 6th, 2010. All right, so this is being recorded on July 10th. Copyright 2010, New Grandview Incorporated, all rights reserved, and we're starting at 5:40 p.m. Hawaii time. Greetings, Zion.
Greetings.
Welcome to Information Farm's Intelligent Analysis with Bob and Ion. And here's our first recording of Joseph Farrell interviewed by George Knapp at Coast to Coast about Joseph's book, Babylon's Banksters, The Alchemy of Deep Physics, High Finance, and Ancient Religion.
You know them, Joe. You love them. It's the Federal Reserve.
And, you know, it was very, very clever when the banksters set that up, that they chose the word federal, because essentially what they were doing was hiding behind that name and making it seem like it's an instrumentality of government. But the only part that government really plays in it is the presidential appointment of the director or the chairman of the Federal Reserve. But beyond that, it's a privately held joint stock company. And, you know, the irony of it all, George, is that during this last big, you know, billions of dollars bailout that began under the Bush administration and has continued under this administration, really what we're doing is borrowing money from the Federal Reserve to bail out the very banksters that are loaning the money to bail them out. So, you know.
Who caused it? Yeah, the guys who caused it.
Exactly.
What level of control does, say, the president have over them in appointing that top guy versus the level of control that the banks might have? I mean, who do they take their marching orders from?
Well, I that's another excellent question. And my opinion would be that the president really has very, very little control over who gets appointed. Certainly, the corporate influence in presidential campaigns to begin with is very, very pronounced. So by the time anyone gets in office, they're going to be more or less told or given a short list of candidates from which to choose.
Well, what is the FDI, the Federal Reserve's agenda then?
Well, personally, I think at one time it was genuinely to gain control of the American economy by any means necessary, but largely through the instrumentality of the creation of massive amounts of debt.
Ion, do you agree with Joseph's notion that the banksters set up the Federal Reserve to control the American economy?
We don't like banksters. I mean, that's like gangsters. And then you got to go, and if you're going to go to the Giza Death Star and all that gobbledygook stuff, it doesn't serve you well. Let's get it back to what he's actually trying to say. The point about the Federal Reserve is they are a private corporation. They're chartered in Delaware under the Commonwealth law, which means they don't serve under the appellate court or maritime law conundrum. And they are a private corporation just as anyone else has a private corporation status. And all the shares, there were no shares offered. The shares were held and still are. They are in the business of to become the central bank for the U.S. what their job is, what they applied for, but very obviously it's turned into much, much more than that. But that's the gist, is they are not have any connection at all to the United States Treasury.
And citizens of the United States are generally under the appellate court law if they don't know the difference.
Well, if they are subject to it, yes.
And they are subject
to be.
Right, and they are subject to it by having a bank account or just being a citizen of the United States?
Nope, citizenry. That's why you came to this country, was so you could choose. When people used to get up, they'd get on their soapbox and make their speech, and they'd say, I'm here today, my brethren, to talk to you, and I'm a tax-paying United States American citizen. Well, the reason they say that is because you have a choice, whether to be a taxpaying or non-taxpaying citizen. You still do.
Well, with the income tax law came in the teens, I think, last
century. No difference. It makes no difference. The only reason they get you there is if you have a bank account.
When you have a bank account, you agree to be subject to the laws of income tax.
Well, that's right, the rules and the regulations. Because if you don't want, if you don't choose to be, all you do is you call and you get a TIN number, a TIN number, rather than a Social Security number. And then you are exempt from those petitionable laws.
Okay, so this common law, does that go back to Virginia and the original colonies?
Yes, yes, the Commonwealth of Virginia. And that's what common law, that's supposedly having to do with the Constitution. But now we've already told you, you might as well give it to Mexico because y'all not using it.
The common law.
The Constitution.
Right, the Constitution. So this common law has been a way for European oligarchies, British oligarchies, to keep a finger in the financial manipulations? Or
no, Bob, common law is where you are who you say you are, and if you've got the right to bear arms, and if somebody knocks on your door and you don't like them, you can preach hell out of them or you can shoot hell out of them.
Well, you were telling me the other day there's a special loophole that the Queen can use that goes into that common law of Virginia.
Of course. That's correct.
Is that a separate issue from what you just said?
Well, if the Queen, common law says, if she comes in and says, I'm the Queen of England, then they don't have to respond, but by her rights, she can be whoever she says she is. But so could Marilyn Monroe walk in and say, I'm the Queen of England. And under the common law, you have no way to say, sorry, ma'am, no, you're not.
Well, the other day you were saying this was an important loophole that was not understood.
Correct.
But I don't know if you want to go into it.
It's the essence of common law is that. It's common. It's not a service. And now, folks, if they're not interested in the maritime law or the appellate court system, if they walk into a courtroom, say they get a document or a question or go into a courtroom, and there's a fringe around the United States flag, that's maritime. That's what they put on boats. And that law says that the captain of the ship said has last say, and that's what appellate courts are all about. So if you go into a courtroom and you see a fringe, gold fringe around the flag, you don't have to be there. You can say, I ain't on your boat, and turn around and walk out. And there's nothing they can do.
And
well,
then,
remember, what you're talking about is Federal Reserve, and you're talking about that they are a private corporation whose job, just like any other central bank or European Union, whose job is to keep a balance from the banking system. That's what it was all set up. You got to go all the way back to Alexander Hamilton, who wanted to print paper money. And then you had the Adams, who wanted coins. He liked to have it to where it'll jingle a little bit. And that was where they first started, but they were getting real cross because every bank was printing their own money. And this was that regulation of trying to set it up so a dollar in Tennessee was as good as a dollar in New York City. Otherwise, the further you got away from your bank or the issuing bank for your paper money, the less it got devalued. Well, they do that today. People make a business of buying and selling money. Think about it. That's a pretty good business, buying and selling money for profit.
What did Hamilton do to overcome that situation? Form the U.S. Treasury or just the central bank or what?
No. It was the in Philadelphia, the U.S. Mint was started, and they were much keener on the coins rather than paper money. Paper money came later. And now, you're talking about the Bureau of Engraving and the currency, the comptroller of the currency. See, when they went off the gold standard, the only way you're supposed to be able to print money is to sell bonds because it's a note. A note is a debt. And I don't know why you're even having to go into this because, well, no, I do know why. We'll do it, no problem. People have got it tangled up. They think folding money is an asset. And if you'll read the piece of paper, the folded money, it's a note. It's a Federal Reserve note. Has nothing to do with the United States of America. Has nothing to do with any of that. It is borrowed. It'd be no different, Bob, than if someone were to loan you money, or you borrow money from somebody, and there was a note created, and then whoever loaned you the money took that note and went and tried to pay their light bill. Same thing. And it has never had value because it's a note. Back in the day, people used to have note burnings. When you'd have a mortgage or a lien and there was a note, well, when you got it paid, you burnt the note. You'd have a note burning. Then it was yourn. Wasn't theirs anymore. They had no claim because that document was the proof that there was a note. Same way with money.
So do you agree with Joseph Farrell that the Federal Reserve was set up to control Americans?
Well, it's not doing a very good job, if it is. They're two steps from a very watery grave, Bob. No country in the world will accept their SWIFT transfers to this day. So
yeah, but
they won, but what did they win?
Right, they won in maybe the 50s and 60s and 70s, but as of 2006, they're on the losing side.
That was only because, the only reason that was because that when Nixon went over there and was setting everything up, that every barrel of oil had to be paid for in a U.S. dollar. And that's
where'd he go to set that up? You said he went over there.
Well, with OPEC.
Okay. Can you say where he went?
Well, the OPEC's moved a bit, so it would have been set up originally in the United Arab Emirates.
Okay, so we've got common law, appellate law, Federal Reserve, the death of the Federal Reserve, or it's hanging by its fingernails. Now, let's
go into a little bit of that since you're at it, since you're going to finally get somewhere. The governors, the sitting governors, which are more powerful than the chairman, okay? The governors are more powerful than the chairman. If you'll look closely in the history, many, many, many of those governors from the 13 different printing offices, and if you'll look on an individual note, it has a letter. It'll tell you from which Bureau of Engraving that it came from as these Federal Reserve notes are printed. It'll have a letter, and those letters will tell you where it came from. Okay? Those are the Federal Reserve banks that each individual NA, national affiliate bank, has to do business with. And they check up every night. They get their money and deposit their money. And if they're ahead, they make a little. And if they're behind, they have to borrow a little. And that's the overnight rate that they set up. It's how they keep a balance. Now, a central bank isn't supposed to make money. But if you recall back when the turmoil was beginning, they kept talking about how the Federal Reserve injected $200 billion and $200 million and $400 million. And if you recall, J.W. just had a blistering fit because the central bank shouldn't have extra funds to inject anything. They were injecting it into themselves.
Mm.
They were just the central bank to clear it of who was ahead and who was behind in the flow of the control of the currency. Well, then they go into the business of injecting currency into the system. You can do that. And yet they did, and Wall Street just squealed like a girl. Oh, they thought it was the most wonderful thing going, and everything's going to be all right for just a minute. And c'est la guerre.
For just a minute. Now it's not all right again.
No, of course. Well, you're now in multi-trillion-dollar debt. Back in the day, if you had a $1 million debt or a couple of $1 million or even $100 million debt, they would divide it up by every citizen and say, okay, you owe $37.50. Pay it up. And you owe it to yourself, but your grandchildren are going to have to pay this debt. Well, now that's turned into trillions, Bob, trillions. And when you start gauging the value of M1, of how much M1 is, it's supposed to be based on the gross national product. And if you don't know, by definition, that is the total value of all goods and services produced in a land or a country or an area, U.S., in 1 year. Now, that's not the national product, not the domestic product, but that's the gross national product. And you can't have more M1 in circulation than your gross GNP. And any economist, now you don't even have to have macroeconomics. Old-timey macro, old-timey micro will tell you that. I mean, you can't have more out than you have the value of your gross national product. We used to print it in the Wall Street Journal, but look for it these days. They don't want you to know what M1 and M3 is. They don't want you to know where all the greenbacks went and how many they have. They're supposed to know how much they have in circulation at any given time and balance it according to the bond ratios. Now, that is done through the Treasury and the T-bill and the T-note auctions. That's how they have to balance to let the Federal Reserve know how much money can be in circulation. But now, what your speaker is talking about is that's all going awry. So if that's what he's saying, then yes, we concur. It's the train has left the tracks. Yes.
Okay, so you object to his use of the word banksters, but JW is pretty outraged, it seemed. He might have felt they were banksters, and people look at that and they think that, well, the Federal Reserve guys can get away with this. They're above the law. That's where they start thinking of banksters. What do you think of that perception of banks? You don't agree with that? It's not the...
Let's just clean it up a little bit. If you're asking us, non-physical, if there's an issue regarding power over authority, we'll clean that up real quick. Power can cause a Gulf of Mexico to fill up with oil. Authority can talk about it. Okay.
So
you're sitting here saying that the Federal Reserve is more powerful than the individual human creators, we say get you up a lawn chair and pull up a stump and just get you some nice, cool, tart lemonade and get you a little parasol and just sit on the sidelines and watch. Because when human individuals come into their place of power rather than authority, you're going to see that's the issue that you're dealing with now. That's what's happening now. When Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae started sliding, then you started scratching your head or your behind because something was itching. But you know, we find it very amazing that Sally Mae hadn't even been mentioned. People act like Sally Mae don't even exist. But it's bumping.
All right, so you would say, instead of saying banksters, these are people operating from a weak platform of authority.
Yes.
Okay, so let's follow.
Oh, and Ion, could you explain what M1 and M2 and M3 are, the money supply?
Okay. M1 is how much money there is supposed to be in circulation. And that's based on the gross national product. Now, M2 is the ambient money, meaning that the money is created every day. For example, if you go down and you buy a car and you pay payments on the car, that note that you make, the value that in the Truth and Fair Credit Lending Act, is supposed to tell you if it's a $10,000 car and when you make the payments you're paying back $12,000 or $13,000 or $15,000, you've increased money because that note, the value of that note is $15,000. Well, they didn't loan but $10,000, so $5,000 right there has been created. Okay? Now, M3 is how much money there is out in tandem because let's say you hoard cash like you do, Ed, under your mattress, all that folding money when you stole that folding money under your sofa. That is, would be included in M3, because there's tons of money that's taken out of circulation, like boxcar loads of it to the country of China and other places. They hold those notes in their original form. So that would be how you calculate M3. That's the total money that's out there in total. all money in circulation, the antique money, the gold certificates, the silver certificates, every piece of paper money has to be calculated and kept up with as M3.
Yeah, and Ed, they stopped reporting the M3 a few years ago in papers like the Wall Street Journal. The reason they stopped reporting it, could you just quickly summarize why?
Well, because if you knew how much was out, you knew your dollars that you had wouldn't be worth a dime.
If you knew how much was owed in the global economy, you mean?
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Okay, Ed, you were going to say something?
Well, they talk about those down pillows, but really I prefer mine to be stuffed with Benjamins.
Well, Benjamins are good. If you got, let's see, a Benjamin right now is about $4.30. So you better get a lot of them. Get a bunch of them.
It takes a bunch.
It's going to go back up. It's going to go back up. Don't worry. It's going to go back up. Has to.
The dollar you're talking about.
Yes, 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 yes.
And why does it have to?
Has to. Because the dragon's going to win.
The dragon is America, and China's going to make sure America wins, and the euro's got to go down.
Well, that's who has the most dollars.
The Chinese.
People, not
yeah.
the People's Republic.
Not, yeah, the Chinese people have it.
The Chinese people.
Okay,
they have the most.
And does that affect the queen?
Well, she's only concerned about the great British pound. Pound sterling, that's all she's concerned with. But as she's dabbling in and out, you see, it starts having a causal effect when you start looking at how minuscule the pound is in relation to, say, OPEC's deposits or what's going on in the U.S. or, you know, an individual bank. An individual bank could outdo the pound as far as that goes. So it's actually tiny, but it has to be a mainstay because that's what so much of their world is based upon, you see.
Well, there's the idea of the International Monetary Fund bundling currencies, and if they bundle the pound within there and they do go to that currency, would that be a benefit to the queen?
No, because if they bundle the currency, it will deflate the value of a pound because it would then be in the pegging basket of the European Union. And that's already all but gone. We sent Bob information the other day of how Switzerland's going back to francs.
Yeah, you used the phrase their world about 2 minutes ago. I don't know if you remember. You were referring to the British? Who was their world referring to?
He was asking about the queen and would
yeah.
the bundling
you meant
of that the bundling of that currency help the queen, and we said no, it would devalue it, because what it would mean would be that it would be pegged at a different level, a more volatile level, because that's how your options run, and the only thing that's getting propped up is you got silly people that are making bets long and short on the Forex as somebody has flatulence or hiccup or some gastroeconomic inflection makes those points move. And the longs and the shorts of those betting on the come, we don't know if you have much of a propensity, Ed, for the crap table. But if you're going to get past the pass, going over the pass line, and you start betting on the come, boy, your chances are great as long as whoever's throwing the dice is hot. But you sure can crap out fast when you're betting on the come line.
And what's the come line?
Longs and shorts on the pegging of currencies through the Forex market.
Could you explain what the Forex stands for?
Oh, of course. It is it's a international group. It would be paralleled to the S&P 500 or Wall Street, but it's done overseas, and it's a business where they buy and sell currencies from one currency and buy and sell stakes from, just as we were talking about, bundling of currencies and what those currencies from one central bank to another, whether it be yen or yuan or Taiwanese dollars or whether it be shekels or rupees or or dollars, they don't really mention those anymore, or pesos. Those are bought and sold on an open market, an international exchange, not in the U.S. And the Forex, then, they buy and sell those margins. And so it's basically a fancy stock market, except instead of buying IBM, you're buying euros or yuans.
And the Swiss have withdrawn from the Forex.
That's correct. That's news.
Yeah, and that's sort of the more surface effect from the shutting down of American access, Federal Reserve access, Treasury access.
Well,
Swift.
That's when Alan Greenspan, he retired. Oh, wait, no, sorry. He quit one day managing the Federal Reserve, and the next time it was Sunday, he didn't even get a gold watch. And the next morning, 6 hours later, he went to work running the European Union. So that ought to tell you something right there. But even so, it's quite a slippery slope because it's not holding, you see. It's gone way up because the dollar went down. And now everybody, now that it's fallen away, it's at $1.25 or $1.26. That's a euro to a dollar. So it's lost about 40%, just like the drop of a hat. So as that slides, and that all, you can blame it on Greece, you can blame it on Turkey, God, I guess you can blame it on the Ottoman Empire, or the Moabites if you want to, but it's not about that. It's that their propping up is even more shallow than the U.S. is propping up. So then what happens, Ed, is everybody runs back to the dollar. Well, when they run back to the dollar, then that drives the euro and its buying power down even more. Now, if you've got euros, it'll pay more interest. Wonderful. But that ain't happening when the value of the currency itself is dropping like a rock. You can make more interest, but if it's a dollar and now it's worth 50 cents, you better make 50% interest, and they're not quite paying that, you see. So as they run back to U.S. dollars, that then makes the demand for U.S. dollars more, so its value increases, and that is the way to work it out, except when that happens, your bond yields go to the toilet. They drop, drop, drop. You've got mortgage rates now lower than they have ever been. Mortgage rates are lower than they have ever been, ever. And once this currency, everybody starts buying back to the U.S., that's going to drive those yields down. And then the next thing you know, you're going to have double or triple digit inflation. And see, that's the hedge. Do you remember the days of Jimmy Carter?
Mm-hmm.
That was the issue. Inflation, 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 inflation. Well, then you had to live through Reaganomics. Now, yeah, it was pretty sweet, but them pots got real expensive, so everybody had to have a pot and a chicken in it. It kind of got expensive with that inflation from the Jimmy Carter era, which then was played out with Paul Volcker. We just love Paul Volcker. Bring him back. He'll show you how to stir it up, but that's a tale of another. That's a tale of a different flavor tea.
Yeah, no. Okay, carry on. But
that's the trick, that you're falling away. And now all this gobbledygook chit-chat and talking that you're in doesn't have anything to do with the human creator coming into their place of power. That's the point. When the individual human creator comes into their place of power, all that'll go away. And it kind of pretty much is now. People are just kind of not giving any attention to it. They don't know. They don't care. They're good. They're tweeting and twatting and twatting and doing whatever it is that they do and at a feverish pace. And that's when Bob gets on the radio and says, y'all just keep typing and everything will be all right. Just keep typing. That's all you got to do is type, type, type. You don't know what you're typing. People reading it don't know what you've typed. They respond, not getting even the letters and the coefficients of any grammar or any type of meaningful engagement of knowledge or thought or thoughts or a complex idea or ideology. It's just OMG, what's the BFD? Yeah, yeah, yeah. LOL. L my A off, and my A is off for the LA, and then, that Milky Holic, that Lindsay Lohan, Lord, she's in the hoose gown now. Law, Brad Pitt may be able to make it one more day. Call the TMZ, it's gonna rock. Oh, get them in here quick. Law, what's wrong with Elizabeth Taylor? She's been ill. Law, my goodness gracious, did you see Joan Rivers smoking that big old cigar like a man, drinking liquor and smoking cigars right there in front of everybody? You know she's got to move in with her daughter, Melissa, because they redid her house in New York City. And all the chit-chat. Well, people are using that as their point of distraction. We don't see a big harm in it. We don't see a big harm in it. Because the more you focusing on where Joy Behar's hemline is, then the less you're giving attention to the real significant stuff that you could get tangled up with and could cross you up. We say come into your place of power and forget most of this gobbledygook, and just like all good food, it will soon pass away.
It might just, before we go into more Joseph Farrell, explain the SWIFT problem for the American Treasury in 2006. Explain what happened there.
Okay. Very simply, how the SWIFT, ADA SWIFT transfer, that's international wire transfers, how they work is, let's say you want to ship money to England, if you want to do that. Mm. Okay. They have reciprocal relationships with other banks and other central banks. And what happens is, let's say, Ed, you want to send Margie in London $1,000. Okay. You don't wrap up them Benjamins and put it in an airmail envelope and send it to her. No, you pay $10 or $12, and if they have, if she, if her banking institution has an ABA number, an ABA SWIFT number, an ABA SWIFT means an international wire transfer. What happens is the Federal Reserve runs this thing called gray screen. And what gray screen is where if you go send $1,000 from your bank, you call your bank or do it online, you can twat about it if you want to anymore, because then that goes through a different place. But the basic, what Bob's asking is what happens is that transfer, they don't ship the money across the water. What they do is they have an account. And let's say you're going to send it to England, okay? Well, the Bank of England, if that's the one you're using, they have an account where they set it up and they have money coming and going. Meaning, there might be somebody in London going to send money to your bank in Hawaii, Ed, and or some affiliate and or some branch. Well, that all wraps back into the Federal Reserve. So the ABA SWIFTs are through the Federal Reserve. So money coming and going, they basically give them a piece of paper, a flash. Back in the olden days, you had a fax. You had to sign it three times, and you faxed it in. And then that was your mark. And then that money was transferred. It had to be collected. Again, the money that they had to ship back over here to the U.S., and it was just like a constant. It's like the old-timey cashier checks, you know, when they do cashier checks. Cashier checks were not drawn on your bank. Cashier checks were drawn from your bank on another bank. Well, that's what the SWIFTs and the ABA SWIFT transfers were regarding. Well, when the U.S. got in such turmoil and foolishness and corruption, they got way backed up. Now, this started with Deutsche Bank. It's Stuttgart and Berlin. They started noticing that there was a world of transfers coming in, more so than they had marks or euros or anything else coming out. And so when that happens, they got to have a little rectification. Well, it got so out of whack that Barclays liked to blow their top. And the Mellon Bank, of course, you know how that goes. In New York, got real crossways with all of it, to the point that it started stretching, to the point that they says, I'm sorry, we can't do this anymore. Stop. And they go, Well, no, no, no. We are U.S. This is a Federal Reserve. You can't. Well, why? Well, then it just kept on until finally they said, we're not taking one more dollar from you. Now,
that's Stuttgart. Deutsche Bank Stuttgart is saying we're not putting up with this.
We're not taking any more SWIFTs, any wires, any more wire ABA SWIFTs.
From
the United States. That's correct.
And that bothered Barclays, or Barclays complained to Deutsche to do something about it?
No, no. They were in the same boat, but they didn't want to be the one to say, you know,
the decision made by Deutsche Bank affected Barclays Bank.
Affected every bank.
Right, but just this particular, Barclays started to get worked up and Mellon got worked up. Are they getting worked up from the point of view of Deutsche Bank's frustration with it, or are they getting worked up that Deutsche Bank was stopping them?
No, Bob. They were all frustrated, but they didn't want to be the one to say no more.
Yeah, okay, so Deutsche Bank bit the bullet.
Said no more. And hadn't had one since. Still hasn't been straight in.
And that was in 2000, early 2006, late 2005.
Absolutely. And that was one of the biggest falls from most of your houses, was because everything they were doing was in and out of ABA transfers, because you remember all them big orders that they're buying and selling to themselves? Each order has to be settled every business day, just like the banks. That's why they used to at 2 o'clock. If you do a transaction after 2 o'clock, it'll be on next day's business. That's because they had to close it, stop it somewhere, because they had to count every plus and minus every day to check up with the Federal Reserve. That's what that cutoff was about. And now it's just wide open. Now, Ed, if you remember back in the day when that was in place, they'd turn the money a certain way. The head had to be the right way. If you go in there now, they'll just hand you a wad full. It ain't worth nothing. They don't sort money no more. It doesn't make any difference. It's all just kind of gibberish. That's the point, to let you know, by the way they're handling it, how not valuable it is. So, SWIFT transfers have stopped. They still stopped. They're still not having international wire transfers.
Right. Now, Ion or Ed, on January 31st, 2006, right at this period where Deutsche Bank bites the bullet and says, we're not having it anymore, that's when Greenspan steps down and runs over to Europe.
That's correct.
He steps down January 31st, 2006, it says here in the Wikipedia.
That's right.
And so the crash of fall September 2008 is a belated surfacing on the symptom level of what really started in two and a half years earlier. Would you agree with that, Ion?
Sure.
Yeah, so the crash starts.
Talking, and what your buddy is talking about here is how the gangsters have took over everything, and we're laughing your ass off? We think it's the funniest thing over. Yeah, they've took over. They've took over. They can't even cash a check. It's their own printing press. They can't cash a check. It's kind of like the bank robbers. If they're going to be the banksters, they're pretty cool with it because they ain't got no money in their vaults to steal.
Yeah, they have the power like anybody else. Just keep typing. That's all they got. Keep typing. So the acronym you're looking for was capital LMAO, laughing my ass off.
Oh, okay. We knew it was OMGBFD something, yeah.
Okay, so here, let's continue with Joseph Farrell worrying about the godfathers of typing, the banksters.
Because, of course, there's never enough principal in circulation to pay off debt. Our debt is proceeding apace at the miracle of compound interest, while the principal just kind of lurks and lurches along at the slow growth of arithmetical growth. So in other words, that interest cannot be repaid on the principal in circulation. But now I think the game has really changed, because if the scenario of economic warfare and David Lee's formula is true, and I think there's a great deal arguing in favor of that scenario, then again, that corporate elite is now on the defensive. They've made too many enemies around the world.
I think you would agree with that statement, Ion, wouldn't you?
Yes, except for this warfare, Warcraft, that's a video game. this warcraft that he's describing is nothing like that at all. It's not. All that's happened is the U.S. has been running around telling everybody how big their goober is, and now, finally, everybody says, all right, big boy, let's see. All I've heard is how great, big, and wonderful you are, and I'm tired of hearing it. I want to see. And they go, oh, whoa, excuse me, we're modest. We're not going to be showing our genitalia. Well, then shut up. If you ain't going to show it, shut up. And that's what's happened. And there ain't no warfare, and there ain't no blah. It's a mess. And now, the interesting thing that he's kind of talking about is that the value, the intrinsic value of money is supposed to be holding pace with the compounding of interest. Well, you can't do that because you can't even calculate interest on $1 trillion because the value of that $1 trillion, you've got to gauge the debt. That's what happened to the euro when Greece was defaulting on their bonds. That's why municipalities are folding left and right, filing for Chapter 9. Well, if you default on your bonds, you're backed up, ain't backed up by nothing. So they can't pay interest on a defaulted loan. If you're not, Ed, if you've got a loan and you're not going to pay it back, why do you care how much interest they charge? If you ain't going to pay, what difference does it make?
Ion, I'm interested. Why did Deutsche Bank, did they have some kind of bankster cloak to be able to bite the bullet? Why were they able to do that?
They saw it was fruitless. They saw
But you're saying they had the guts to. Why didn't anybody else? Why didn't the Chinese or some other country bank?
Because the Chinese had the most dollars. That'd be like stealing all the money in the world and then setting it on fire.
So the Deutsche Bank had the second most dollars in the world?
No, they did not. They just said, we're not getting any deeper in your mess.
Who has the second most dollars to the Chinese, if there is such a position?
Oh, that would be Dubai.
Okay, the Arabs, all right. So,
no, we
Dubai,
said Dubai. We didn't necessarily say Arabs. Because
okay.
Then you got to start getting into the Shiites and the Sunnis you'll find every one of them U.S. dollars is in Jordan, and that has nothing to do with any of those, see, because it's all this backdoor swap-topping. That would be what you call mafioso, if you're going to do it that way, from a place of authority. It has nothing to do with power, but it has to do with authority. And that's what seems to be in question or in play that's causing all these wordy words to be discussed right now.
Right, so the Chinese have the most money, and they or the most dollars, and they therefore control the economic transactions at the Maybank in Kuala Lumpur, Malaysia. The second tier out of Dubai, their transaction place is Jordan.
Yes, but their transactions go through Maybank as well.
Right, but they're the second tier. Jordan was around before. Jordan is a leftover from the Ottoman Empire?
Yes. Very good, Bob. You're a good study.
Okay, so we're explaining
if you want to cash a check, don't go to Iran, go to Jordan.
Okay. Syria. Jordan or Syria.
Mm-hmm. Doesn't hold water when you start talking about the reason that they can't pay the debt because they can't pay compound the interest. Because they're saying it's holding its pace, and what we're saying is, no, it hasn't. It hasn't. You've diluted it down to where it isn't worth anything. That's why gold is sitting at $1,200 an ounce. And gold hadn't gone up since Jesus. What's happened is money's went down.
Yeah, I find that these commentators...
They're from Idaho.
No, they think that it's getting risky close or it's an illusion and the bankers are keeping it going. You're pointing out that nobody is in charge as of 4 years ago, so to speak.
Pretty much.
The typing keeps it going.
Well, and that's not even doing much because Betty White's got a new show, so that's much more. That trumps anything Donald Trump's working on.
Okay.
Betty White's back on TV, so that's way more. That's the sacrificial lamb, Bob. That's way more important than what the Queen's up against. Betty White's an old lady and still making shows. Even all the Golden Girls is dead. after Rue McCallahan passed to come on and joined us. So she was left all by herself, so she says, well, hell, I'll go be hot in Cleveland.
All right. I guess I wanted to say, all if somebody comes on, a lot of people on coast to coast and that, they're worrying about the money situation. It's really bad. It's you know, like they're just holding on. No, there's nothing more to say. It's over 4 years ago.
It's been over. She's fat lady sung. Everybody went home. They've swept the auditorium, and they're just trying to figure out if somebody can come along and rent the hall to pay the light bill.
Right. So, yet the economy can keep going, or the information market can keep going. As long as someone who comes up with a new worry book about Jesus getting really bad, you know, a Jim Morris or somebody, that keeps it going. That's the fatty typing.
We don't know that it's keeping it going, Bob. We don't know.
That ended the last 6 months. Yeah, the typing ain't working.
Now,
I take back the typing ain't working anymore.
It ain't working anymore. now they're running around suing everybody because of all this money that they owe that people ain't paying back because the money that they got ain't worth nothing and ruining this and ruining that. And the people are saying, sue me. And now the people in the courthouse ain't even making minimum wage. Hell, they're not even going to work. So how fast you think them dockets is going to go through when them fat cats and them black robes ain't going to get their money checks? They're not going to put nobody in jail. They can't feed the ones that got in the penitentiary now.
Okay.
And the jailer's in jail too, and then them getting paid minimum wage. You're like, you know what? I'm good. I think I'm going to call in well today.
Yeah. James and I crashed the economy because we knew about the SWIFT problem. In 2008, we talked about that.
You got to say ABA. You got to say
ABA SWIFT. The ABA SWIFT. Okay,
that's different than SWIFT because the SWIFT, they control. You can wire money in the U.S. to the U.S., and you can do an international wire transfer if they have a corresponding bank in the U.S. That's because there's going to be listeners are going to go, well, I sent Aunt Myrtle in Stuttgart. I sent her $11.50, and it went through. That's only because Deutsche Bank has an affiliate in the U.S., and very small, minor, little things can go through. But the days of these great big transfers, they just get bottled up, and then there's a delay, and then you can't get your money, and then they don't know where it went, and they don't know, and they're not sure, and that was sent back, and it didn't go, you know, that they tell you anything you want to know. It's about the same success you have, Ed, by making a deposit into your own account. It's about that fruitful.
Yeah, so that's on the level of the big banks, too big to fail. Well, they did fail. They're not even allowed to engage in typing.
Well, you ought to know that when the Railroad Bank lost out with First Union when it was Nations Bank, and one day they're rocking along and they lost a billion. That's when a billion was a lot of money. Now, a billion ain't a lot of money now, but they lost $1 billion and they had to merge, and that's how you got Bank of America anyway, which is a little rock gut bank in San Francisco, California, that was a shell that they pulled back together so they could save face with the Federal Reserve, because at that time you only had $50 billion in FDIC insurance.
Is that
$50 billion. Now you got
is that the 70s you're talking about?
No. That was 80s. 80s, 80s.
Okay,
you
80s.
Had First Union and the Railroad Bank, and then that rolled and rolled and rolled, and then it turned into Nations Bank, and then it turned into... And then it turned into BAFA, Bank of America.
Oh, okay. So So I'm saying that we crashed the economy, James and I, and then I came up with the neo-recovery by saying keep typing. Now the neo-recovery has collapsed. So the typing don't work. So now we meet our maker.
And you can look at your Dow Jones. It's going up and down like a wind in the shade. And you look at the old volume of what it used to be traded, the actual shares and the shares that are being traded now. And then the ins and the outs, you used to have a list of the ones of what was being active. Well, now you start looking at it, and it's in and out, in and out, in and out. They're just buying and selling amongst themselves and calling that gains and losses within the exchange. They'll put in a buy order and a sell order at the exact same time to keep the volume up, and they use their computers to bounce that in and out. So then you have the day of rage of day traders seeing this, taking advantage of, this gets stamped before this sale order gets put in, and making a penny or a dime or a nickel on any little transaction going through. And they started making a lot of money because they were buying and selling amongst themselves. Well, in between the time it got posted and it got credited, the stock fluctuated and bounced, and they're making money on it.
The nano economy.
Nano.
Yeah, so thought
nano,
about that.
Nano, that'd be Mark and Mindy.
Okay, so Joseph Farrell's another character who's worrying about what happened a long time ago, so this is an after image of worry we're listening to.
And the other thing that they're faced with now is China's very active role into going into third world countries and building up their infrastructure, roads and hospitals and schools and things like that. They're doing that with a vengeance in Africa, and they're doing it with a vengeance along with the Russians in Latin America. So they are really losing their worldwide grip. Their only base of power that they really have the similar amount of control over that they've had in past decades is North America.
Let's begin with the bailout. Your thoughts on this bailout?
I had the impression, George, when I was watching those initial hearings back in the tail end days of the Bush administration, that we were looking at people who were acting like they were trying to pay off a hidden blackmailer, because there was this business that they wanted of no oversight of where this money was going to go. We were just supposed to hand them a blank check, and they were going to spend it as they wished. And to me, that smacks of the behavior of people that are under some sort of hidden pressure. I don't know from where. I have my suspicions. And my suspicions go back to the end of World War II and the post-war founding of the Bilderberg Group. Because what I think the purpose of that group was for was to take all that Nazi loot and make it available to the big Western banks in New York City and London and launder that money. But any time you're sitting down with the likes of some sort of post-war international Nazi organization with a lot of loot, that's going to come with a heavy marker to pay off. And when that marker comes due, you'd better be able to pay. And I think something like that probably happened when the collapse came and the money was demanded.
The marker is the mark.
The German mark.
That's exactly right. So that's the only thing that was relatively credible. Now, Ed, if you want some music to go along with this that would be very apropos, like background music, because you're so wonderful at putting these things together, go into Poor Lazarus. And that's found on O Brother, Where Art Thou? Soundtrack. And the name of it is Poe, P-O, Lazarus. And you listen to that song real close. It's kind of a dirge. And it'll go along real pretty with this word. It's kind of like, you know, a soundtrack with background music. Well, okay, maybe not so much. Make sure you get Poe Lazarus involved in this mark of where, what this is talking about and going on. And then you listen to the words of what happened to Lazarus. And then you'll feel about the same way.
Okay, Ion, you're saying that the mark is strong at the end of World War II? I mean, what are you saying about the mark?
It has nothing to do with World War II. He's just making gobbledygook, talking about like and sort of, and they. When you have this large debenture, if you have a marker out like that at casino, got you up some casino money, and you got a marker, when it's due, you better be able to pay. That's all he's saying. It doesn't have anything to do with any of that other stuff. He's just trying to make points of inference.
Well, he's talking about Nazi loot, and they were the... Can you just prove what he's saying about Nazi money?
Sure. What did the Nazi loot? Where was this loot from? They didn't win, Bob.
Yeah, but some of the German generals scarfed the money out starting in 43.
Well, great. Here we got it. We got, well, good. Okay, here's, well, what are you going to do when we tell you with great authority? And we could give you the addresses, but I don't think it would be in their best interest or your, Ed's best interest. When we tell you that there are human beings walking around on planet Earth that already have more money than he is. And you go, wait, Ion, now wait, stop. What? There are humans, individual humans, walking around on planet Earth who have more money in their credited, validated accounts with more money in those accounts than is.
Yeah, but you can't show that. You could give their addresses, but you won't. So let's, I don't know what, you won't give the addresses, so we don't know.
It's valid as saying that the Bilderbergers was sleeping with the ancient Samaritan Hebrewoids that got the neo-Nazi money that then used that to encapsulate, to pay biggerish and to pay hush money from the mobsters and the gangsters and the ripsters and the robsters and all this stuff that's being laid out and paralleling it back to the end of the war. The only reason they were, wars are expensive. Lots of money gets spent. And everybody has to quit doing everything else and focus on the big engine of building in the war business. That's all that's about. Then they come taking them all them tanks apart and got all the rubber, couldn't even buy rubber tires when your casings got slick on your cars because all the rubber had to be used for the war effort. Couldn't even get a piece of chocolate because they all had to be in war rations. Well, and you could might as well just as easily be saying, yes, and Milton Hershey almost went bankrupt selling chocolate for the war effort. Well, that's, and then we could say that, and you go, well, that's a bit of a stretch, don't you think? Well, then sitting here turning around saying that it's the Bilderbergers who got the Nazi loot, because they didn't win, by the way, and in what they were conquering, this great big piles of money, it wasn't in their currency, didn't do them any good.
Okay, so what I would say to support you is that money was no longer private property by the 30s, and you had the growth of the warfare welfare states in the 50s and 60s, and everybody was making money. You didn't need to own money, no private ownership. Everybody created money. That was the boom after World War II. Would you say that's more accurate?
Of course, of course, of course.
Yeah, if you're talking about the private ownership of money, you're back in the 20s and teens of the 19th century. And to talk about the Federal Reserve or any bankers, Rockers, Rothschilds, they don't own money. It becomes a free medium after World War II. Now,
yes,
what's interesting,
if you really want to get down to that level, then you better be talking about the Vanderbilts and the Carnegies and J.P. Morgan. If you're going to go there,
if you're going to go into the private ownership of money, you're talking about.
That's correct. That's the last bastion of individuals owning money.
Vanderbilts, Morgans, and what was the third one?
Carnegie.
Carnegie, right. So,
And the Sioux.
Yeah, that's, how do you spell that?
S-I-E-U-X.
S-I-E-U-X.
The Chinese, Bob.
S-I-E-U-X. What about the Zimmermans?
No. Oh. They're just making vigorish, trying to build trees for Israel.
Okay. The point is that what's interesting is that the public ownership of money was sped up by the computerized economy, and that's what freaked everybody out. We collectively,
but they had to have the chip body pick up the check somewhere because the counting houses was empty, Bob. They had to convert it into an electronic, an ACH transfer, because nobody could count that. You could zip it out, zip it in, zip it out, zip it in. It's moot. The only reason they had to do that is because if everybody had to go to the bank to get cash, you just go cash your check and have your money for the week. Well, if everybody did that, they'd find out there ain't no money. So it's got to be on your debit card. It's got to be on your credit card. It's got to be on your American Express.
Right. So the Deutsche Bank did not represent some secret elite that decided to stop everything and screw everybody up. The Deutsche Bank represent the tribal ownership of money, everybody owning money, not private property, but public property. That freaked out a few years ago, that sense of who was owning what. In other words, the public crashed itself.
Fair churn. Good, Bob.
What's fair churn mean?
Very good.
Oh, okay, thanks. All right, so let's carry on. Joseph Farrell is going to focus on people he thinks own money.
Because the behavior of those bankers was to me far too suspicious and far too nervous. They were too nervous in asking for this no oversight clause.
You know, I hate to insult drunken sailors everywhere, but it's like Wall Street was acting like worse than any drunken sailor you could imagine. I mean, brought this on themselves,
yes,
risking all money, all kinds of money, gambling, betting against their clients, things of that sort. And then, you know, they come hat in hand, bail us out, we're too big to fail. What do you make of that whole we're too big to fail scenario? Would things be worse if we hadn't bailed them out?
No, I don't think so. They aren't too big to fail. You know, the problem is that we have followed or really been suckered into believing that, you know, what's good for corporate America is good for all of us. Well, corporate America has shifted our manufacturing base largely overseas and done so under the aegis or the name of these goofy free trade agreements. When America was prosperous, we had relatively heavy protective tariffs on our industry, and that's when that industry grew and our trade grew proportionally. Now, we are a debtor nation. We carry on a negative balance of trade with most nations, especially with China, because they're actually producing things. So I think too big to fail is absolutely untrue. If anything, they are too big not to be audited and not to be closely regulated by honest government.
Ed, now go back. They used to pay people not to raise cotton. They used to give subsidies to plow up your peanuts if you was having a good crop because it hurt how much you'd get a bale. Yes, they shipped all the manufacturing into other countries and with NAFTA and GATS and all those other treaties. Well, the reason that they did that is because people that was producing, they wanted such a wage. They wanted $25, $35, $45, $55 an hour to sew shirts. And they could go to another country and get somebody to do it for 25 cents a day, and they're tickled to death. Because with the current exchange rate, they were getting ones getting fat. Isn't it interesting now that the most wealthy human on the planet right today that they're counting is in Mexico? And you realize how many pesos you'd have to be the richest person in the world? Reported. We'll say reported. But it's very intriguing. Very intriguing.
Yes.
Alan Greenspan said it the best when he was talking about the Great Depression. He happened to be lucky enough to live through it. He said, during the Great Depression, people lost everything they had. Now, they called this what you're going through now, right, as he jumped on the plane and left this wonderful place and said, see ya, thanks for the fish. He said, this is called the Greater Depression, because now people's going to lose things that they don't even own.
Now,
in the Depression, people lost everything they had, but everything they lost, they had. Now you've got a situation where people's losing stuff they didn't even have. Now, that's a hell of a note.
I've talked about this for 20 years. You don't own anything when you own information, because you give the information to somebody and you still got it. But if you give them an apple, you can't eat it anymore. So the Depression talking about apples, but when you're talking about software bytes, the last 30, 40 years, nobody owns anything, and it's not a problem that nobody owns anything. But what's interesting, it's interesting that the crowd gets so big. We got so big that we did fail. It wasn't that the big banks, the private corporate owners, were too big to fail. We got so big with our public ownership of money that we decided to fail. We did it to ourselves.
You can go back to old timey. You can go back to old timey, and you can get that 4,000 or 5,000 pound lumbering bull. He gets so big he can't even walk. And then these new little bitty old bulls coming along there that don't make steers. They got a little something to them so they can hang on. Them little fellas start getting a lot more busy than them big old lumbering bulls because they get so big they can't even walk. And that's what happens. You lose your, Bob, would you call that your agility? Or would you call that tactility?
Excellent point. We don't want to get distracted. Good question.
Well. Certainly. We don't want to bring anything interesting in this conversation, for sure.
Okay, but it's interesting. The idea that something would be too big to fail, that's the red herring that prevents you understanding that we could fail, did fail, but it was the collective we. That's an important point.
It's a set point. If you think about it, how did you get that big if you were too big to fail? So it's only the little ones. It's the ones that ain't got nothing to lose is the ones you got to start looking out after. The ones that ain't got nothing to lose, them's the ones that don't have a dog in the fight.
And that would be the old private owners, the Rockers and Rockefeller Rothschilds. They're the ones who don't have any dog in the fight.
Exactly right.
Okay.
What do you make of corporations, and again, they're American-based corporations, who send billions, tens of billions, to these offshore banks strictly as a tax dodge? And our government still does business with these companies.
Well, again, I think that that's a practice that has to be stopped. I mean, they are literally plundering the country, and it's high time, you know, to call a halt to this laissez-faire free trade idea and start bringing some of that money back home and bringing some of the industry back home with it. And that can only be done, in my opinion, by restructuring some of the policies of the government. We've got to make industry something that is profitable to do.
You have a problem with him trying to stop that?
Yes, legislate. Why don't he go ahead and legislate morality while he's at it? The reason that these trusts and these offshore and inshore and round the mountain thing is because all your politicians use them. And if they turn them out, then the Congress and the Senate won't have a way to run their slush funds. And then you won't have to spend $150 million to get a job that pays $400,000 or $500,000 a year in a little house with not many benefits.
Right. Good point is that to bring in legislation is to give to the very institutions that require the offshore circulation, is your point.
Exactly.
So forget politics. Forget the institutions. Let's get into the anarchy that's present and alive today. And it's not even anarchy if you can see the order in it. Okay.
Well, so you're saying that they got to stop this. Well, the only one that collects it, if you ever get a tax refund check, if you ever get a check, what does it say? Ed, you can join here. If you actually got a rebate from the government, and it's from a tax rebate, in the envelope, if you get an envelope, what does it say? Well, here's what it says. They're normally like they say, U.S. Treasury.
Yes.
Why don't they say the Treasury of the United States of America? Because it's not. The IRS has nothing to do with the federal government at all. IRS agents are not employees of the federal government. They don't get paid by the government. They have nothing to do with the government at all.
And in U.S. Treasury, what does U.S. stand for?
Oh, United States Treasury. But you also, there's about 1,600 United States mints. And there's about 1,600 United States highways and lowways and byways. And they use the word U.S. doesn't have to have anything in it. Then you don't know what it means. But it doesn't say United States of America Treasury from the Treasury of the United States of America. It just says U.S. Treasury.
You think we can bring the money back home, the jobs back home?
Well, nobody will work when the high school girls are giving away for free. He's saying free trade. Well, how much does free trade cost?
Okay, I'm interested in a list of topics here. It might be interesting to go through Joseph Farrell's comments on history. And Ion, feel free at any point to correct whatever he's saying about history or about events in history. Here we go.
Joseph Farrell, you said there's no question in your mind that bankers had something to do with the assassination of Lincoln. What's the evidence?
Well, it actually comes from two different sources, George. One of them is an article that appeared in 1864 in the London Times. It was kind of an op-ed piece by Lord Rothschild. And he lamented the fact that Lincoln was funding or financing the Civil War by issuing these debt-free greenbacks. And he called it an aberration, and it had to be dealt with. In other words, it had to be put an end to. But the other interesting thing I ran into was a comment by Chancellor Otto von Bismarck, who, of course, was a contemporary of Lincoln. And he wrote or stated in 1866, I believe it was, that there was no doubt in his mind that the high financial powers of Europe had had a hand in the assassination of President Lincoln precisely because of his financial policy. Well, you know, considering the source, that it's coming from here, you know, the Chancellor of Prussia. This is a man that's rather well connected to those high financial powers, and for him to say something like that and say it on the record to me is pretty persuasive.
Okay, do you see these European financial powers involved in Lincoln's death, Ion?
Well, Victoria wanted the Confederate States of America to win because they had the cotton. They had the natural resources. And she saw if they were broken in two or if the Confederacy won, that she would have a much bigger hold on trade and or business going on in these United States.
So she had the best motive to off Lincoln.
And helped